an unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning. Daniel this morning said, what did you say? Like you were crazed with current events, or mad with current events, or something?
I said words to that effect. Yes.
Close enough.
I think I said anger.
I think you didn't, but I think it was partly in response to what Ian said. Some, I forget what he said, but anyway, never mind. Current events. It's hard times for those of us who don't approve of how the president acts and how the senators acted. And I find myself very frightened. And beyond hatred.
And beyond
hatred or even anger, I guess I'm feeling kind of stunned. And when we didn't talk about it a lot at breakfast, but we did talk about it a little bit. And I said, I've been reading a book called American Sutra, which is about, we're going to use it for the class in April. And it's about the Buddhist Japanese in World War II, and the Shinto, but the man who wrote it is a Soto Zen priest, and I think his focus is more on the Buddhists, but at any rate, the Buddhist clergy were really targeted because they were thought to be potential threats, so they were among the earliest of the Japanese rounded up for being interned. And were treated like prisoners, especially at the beginning.
In this country, or in Japan?
In this country, we interned them, and the author Duncan, I think it's Ryuten Williams. He's a Japanese American. I think his mother was Japanese. Given that his last name is Williams, the odds are good. But at any rate, he quotes some of the headlines and things like the Los Angeles Times, which back then, of course, was a pretty, it was a very conservative paper. It changed. But at any rate, and it wasn't just the Times, Life magazine, and you name it. They really were xenophobic, and temples got bombed and torched and looted and so on. You know, so we always think, one thinks, you know, whatever you're in, that's the worst. I don't know. I mean, you know, Roosevelt signed that order. You know, Roosevelt, the god in many homes, including mine. And I I think he apologized. I'm not sure if he did, because he died pretty, you know, before the war really ended. But Earl Warren apologized, and he was either the governor of California or he was already on the Supreme Court, I don't remember. So there have been lots of apologies. And we lived through the McCarthy era. And I'm going to say this feels different, and I don't know. I mean, I sort of remember the McCarthy era, but I was really a little kid. I remember, you know, my father and mother talking about it or various things. But I don't really have that much of a sense of it. So I don't know. I guess it feels particularly frightening because I feel that the Republican Party has become, I mean, the word they use sometimes even in the media is cult-like, which maybe we'll do, but I don't know, or tribal, but at any rate, monolithic kind of, you know, that just do what Trump says pretty much, you know. And I don't think that you, and that did not used to be the case. It certainly wasn't the case around Nixon's impeachment. And Martin Luther King Jr. says that Christ meant it when he said, love your enemies. And I say Buddha meant it when he said basically the same thing. And there's a kind of a compilation of his teachings called, I think it's the Visuddhimagga. But the part that is the four Brahma-viharas, and the first one is loving kindness. And these are the divine abodes, where the admonition is, you know, live here, make this your home. And interestingly, King, in 1957, which was pretty early on in his preaching career, he was still at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And He delivered a sermon called Loving Your Enemies. And he says in the sermon that he tries to talk about this at least once a year. And both of them wind up dealing mostly with how to deal with the hatred and the anger and so on. In the Buddhist text, in the Brahma-vihara about loving kindness, it talks about, you know, it's easy to love the ones that you love, but others, it's either neutral or it's hard. And people that gossip about you or thwart you or say mean things about you or to you. So it keeps talking about ways. I didn't go look back at it, but it basically keeps talking about ways to deal with not loving somebody. And it says, you know, okay, notice what it does to you to hate. If that didn't work, try this. And then if that didn't work, try this. And if that didn't work, try this. And then the other three, which are like is compassion and I don't remember, but anyway, the names of the four residential buildings at Spirit Rock. At any rate, they're the same kind of thing, except they don't go into it again so much. You know, they'll say this is the admonition, and then if you're struggling with it, go back to the first one and try all those things. You know. find something good about the person and concentrate on that, something you admire about them. And King has similar admonition, but he says, this flowing from the lips of our Lord and Master, ye have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. And King says, he meant that. He meant that. And that it's actually practical advice. And I think it's right. And I think that for me, it needs to be my practice. And I find it very hard. I'm, as you all know, I'm really good at making fun of Donald Trump. And I was very touched by what Nancy Pelosi said to a reporter. It was a couple of weeks ago, something like that. And it was caught on tape, and so then the reporter said something about do you hate the president? And she actually got angry. She said, "Don't ever say that. I don't hate the president. I don't hate anybody. I may hate what they do, but I don't hate them, and I don't hate the president. I pray for the president." And then she said it again after the impeachment trial. And I believe her. I think she... She sees herself as practicing her religion. I mean, she does practice her religion, I think. I mean, I don't know her personally, so I can't say. But I do think that's her intention, and I think she practices it a lot. She hates what he does. And I think, too, she feels very sorry for him. Would she say that she prayed very hard for him because he's gone so far off the rails? And it's practical advice. It's an admonition. It's not just advice. It's saying, both of them are saying, do this. There's another compilation called the Dhammapada, and it starts out with a verse about, you know, hatred only leads to hatred. It's non-hatred, sometimes translated as love, leads to non-hatred or to love. And we know this. It's very hard to remember. And I think, for me at any rate, the impulse to make fun of him comes a lot out of fear. So, you know, one of the things we do as human beings is we belittle somebody of whom we're afraid. And in the process, we don't claim our own power. And we do have power. You know, we can certainly vote in this instance. We can, you know, work on get out the vote. We can do poll watching. We can make phone calls and so on and so on and so on. There are things we can do. But not if we get paralyzed, or not if we get consumed by hatred. So King kind of breaks it down into two parts. He says, about this admonition, he says, Jesus has become the practical realist. The words of this text glitter in our eyes with a new urgency. Far from being the pious injunction of a utopian dreamer, this command is an absolute necessity for the survival of our civilization. yes, it is love that will save our world and our civilization, love even for enemies. Jesus was very serious when he gave this command. He wasn't playing. He realized that it's hard to love your enemies. He realized that it's difficult to love those persons who seek to defeat you, but he wasn't playing. We can't dismiss this passage as just another example of Oriental hyperbole. So he, King breaks it down into two big pieces. One is how to do this, and then the other is why. And how. I think this is in the Brahmavihara too, I'm sure it is. Anyway, the first thing he says is, look at this one, look at yourself. Are you causing the other to hate you or dislike you in some way? Did you do something that triggered this? And he points out, there may be things about you that cause this person to hate you. That cause this person to hate you. I'm just going to have to live with this. Sorry. What do you call it? A frog in my throat? that you can't control. You know, they hate their Uncle Ralph, and you walk just like Uncle Ralph. Or some teacher in their elementary school is really mean to them or something. There's nothing you can do if you look like somebody that hurt them or that they happen to hate. You walk a certain way, or your voice is a certain way, or something like that. There's really nothing much you can do about that. But beyond that, it's useful to stop and, as Dogen says, turn the light inward to illuminate yourself. Turn the finger here, pointing towards yourself, and ask yourself, have I done something? You know, maybe not on purpose even, but just did I do something that might have really hurt this person? Is there something that I said thoughtlessly without much thinking about it, but that now that I stop and think about it, it was probably really hurtful? And he points out, this is in the language of the 50s, you know, that of course we're not going to become communists, but he says, you know, one of the reasons that communism is thriving is because democracies have not really lived up to our ideals. We're not setting such a great example. I mean, this is 57. I mean, there were still a lot of colonies in 57. And a huge amount of racism. I mean, overt racism then, as opposed to now when it's not, it's usually a little more covert. And he quotes this great quote, you know, and that, are we willing to look at ourselves? Because so often we see other people's faults really clearly. And this is what Jesus means when he says, how is it you can see the mote in your brother's eye and not see the beam in your own? Or another translation, how is it that you see the splinter in your sister's eye and fail to see the plank in your own eye? That's such a great image of this. You know, and we say, don't be the person with the board, which is so much of the time we walk around as if we had a long board here, we're carrying it. So we can see okay around here, but we can't see over there at all. So don't be the person with the board. And so often we are. We have, I mean, a blind spot doesn't cover it, you know. And I think I referred to this, but, you know, looking for something good about the person. Is there something that you admire about them or that you see that is a good thing? That you saw them do something kind for somebody, or they said something nice, or they seem to have kids that you respect. So they must probably not have been a terrible, terrible parent. You never know. But something. Now stop and think. What I'm not asking if, I'm saying what is one thing that you do admire or respect about Donald Trump?
Can you steal Hillary Clinton's answer?
Do you believe it?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah. Do you remember what she was?
Yes, I know. I remember what she said. I decided not to share it because I don't believe it anymore. I did then.
That he deeply loves his children.
Oh, I thought she said that he raised great kids.
Yeah. That was part of it, but she also used the word love in it.
Yeah, those were the days before Ivanka turned on her and so forth and so on.
Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, yeah, okay. But just close your eyes and think about it for a moment. And no, you don't get, you have to think of something else, Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to ask, we can talk about it at tea, because we don't have a lot of time. Another, and this is akin to, linked to looking at yourself, to acknowledge that all of us have some evil and some good in us. And that's true of your enemy, too, that person, evil as they may be, they have some good in them. There isn't anybody that's just all one way. So to try to remember that and to look for that good piece and concentrate on that. These are antidotes to hating individuals. And I touched on this, but I want to say, you know, hating really does harm you. The Brahma Vihara has a kind of a long list of that. You lose sleep. You become ugly. People avoid you. It's corrosive inside of you. That bitterness consumes you. And so it harms you to hate. Another thing that King says is to forbear harming the other person if you get a chance. And this one, to me, seems complicated. He said, like, there's a time when you could write a letter of recommendation and you'd for them to get a better job, and you don't do it. Or that kind of thing. And I think, yes, but if you think that they're not qualified for the job or you think they'll harm people, I don't know. Maybe you don't write anything. But I wouldn't write a letter of recommendation for somebody that I thought was actually in a position to harm people. So what is it that, with the 12-step thing, you made amends to them unless it would hurt them or others, something like that. So, but I think that notion is useful. You know, it's at least something to think through carefully that revenge is not a useful thing. It's bad for you the same as any other hating is bad for you. And so if you have a chance to harm them, forbear from doing it.
Such as what you did to Lieutenant Colonel Damon and his
That's right.
brother.
That's right. And you can hate what they do. You know, it isn't that he's not talking about becoming a fool. And King certainly isn't. You know, he says that, you know, the hate the system that produced this person, but don't hate the person. Hate the person's deeds and fight the person's deeds, but don't hate the person. I mean, you know, think about what his upbringing must have been like. You know, his father probably didn't show much affection and trained him to be between his father and Roy Cohn. You know, Roy Cohn died, you know, of AIDS, friendless, disbarred. And he wasn't, I don't think he was a happy camper. They say he really loved his friends. I don't know. I just remember him as this evil presence. That's what my parents said. But forbearing to harm the person, it's useful to stop and think, you know, am I writing a letter that's honest or not? Or should I write it or should I just not write it? Or should I write it? I mean, maybe sometimes in order to fight the person's deeds, you actually need to write an honest letter, which is of disrecommendation or something, however you say that. He suggests we remember the notion of love, of agape, the Greek word agape. They had three. There's eros, love, and what is it? Philia, love. And, eros, we think of it as romantic love. I think they had it as a kind of a deeper thing than that, but still that kind of thing. And then philia would be for friends or family that you have a lot of love for. But agape is something, he says, of the understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all people. It is a love that seeks nothing in return. It is an overflowing love, that what theologians would call the love of God working in the lives of people. And when you rise to love on this level, you begin to love people not because they're likable, but because God loves them. You look at every person and you love them because you know God loves them. And that person might be the worst person you've ever seen. You know, and that's, we talk about bodhisattvas, about beings that are here for all beings and that don't see a separation. And they're simply here to be useful and to support all of us in our liberation. And when we act like that, we're all bodhisattvas. So, he says, this is what Jesus means, I think, in this very passage when he says, love your enemy. You come to the point that you love the individual who does the evil deed while hating the deed that the person does. Now, the why part. Partly because he says, you know, hate leads to hate. Oops. And that's true. And, oh, well, he put this in the why part, that hate distorts the hater. I talked about that. And that love leads to love. Love the person, hate the deeds or the system. So, and talks about the redemptive power of that. And of course, he talks about nonviolent protest, that violence leads to more violence and more hatred. And he has a wonderful example that you've probably heard about because of the book, what is it, Team of Rivals, that Lincoln had Stanton in his cabinet as the Secretary of War, even though Stanton had been, during the campaign, had been, you know, bad-mouthing him right and left. And when he said he was going to do it, Lincoln's advisors said politely, "What are you, crazy?" And he said, "Well, I've looked and looked. He's the best man for the job." And then, so he brought him in, and there were other people, other rivals in that cabinet that they worked together, and they came to respect each other and to respect him. Stanton came to deeply love him. And that, I don't know if he did it out of love for them exactly, but he certainly did it out of non-hating. He just did what was best, what he thought was best for the country. So I say this because I think we have to find it in ourselves. I have to find it in myself to not give in to that hatred, or at least to be aware of it and not let it be the only thing. So I'm going to take a couple of questions with it. We can also talk about this at tea because it's already 11:15.
Uh-huh. I was thinking a lot when you were talking. I'm kind of addicted to this, satire news shows, the Daily Show, shows and so forth. And I've just been thinking, you know, sometimes I see almost, I can make an argument that this is you should support these just because they're, there's a lot of good. They're the only place where there's, real conversation sometimes, real confrontation of folks who are, I think are sometimes doing things that are problematic. But also, they're making fun of folks, and it's certainly those are the things, those kinds of jabs are the things I hear. If I'm trying to think, what do I do? And, it's those kinds of jabs are what folks, I think fuel Trump in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I feel a lot of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, well, that's a good phrase. And Bloomberg is coming out with some very funny ads and making fun of Trump's weight and things like that, and he's getting under his skin, and I think probably laughing at him is the thing that's hardest for him to take. So it is difficult, but I think I need to work on this heart, and it doesn't mean that I lose my sense of humor, and I don't think I'm going to stop making fun of him. But it's just good to remember that my intention is to not hate him, and my intention is to do what I can to defeat him. But you don't have to hate him to defeat him. You have to find a way to say no. No. Are you?
Well, really quick. I was thinking this is a
stillness of the heart, and with our wellness of heart and our nurturing our own heart health or emotional health and such, we can have better compassion.
That's right. That's right. It's also, he didn't talk about, you know, we should start with yourself, look at your own hating or your own, how you contributed, but also look at yourself, how much you hate yourself, how much you gang up on yourself somehow. And if you're coming from that, you know, it's very hard to open your heart. That's why loving kindness meditation starts with yourself. But that's a whole other lecture. Next week. Okay. Yeah.
I guess, when you were speaking, I kept thinking, well, okay, but what is love in the tradition?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, like you're saying, you love the person, but you hate the deed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what I'm asking. I guess I'm just asking what is love in that situation,
Love. It's not, it doesn't ever mean that you just roll over. It might be that the way that you demonstrate love for a little kid, you know, is to send them to their room or to say, no, you can't have that toy or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't always, oh, yes, little darling, whatever you want. That's not loving a child. And I think you can fight somebody like him. You don't have to hate him. Just fight him. Mm-hmm. Just stand up and say no, however you do it, but just say no. And sometimes you might need to raise your voice saying no, sometimes not. But you don't have to do it from hating. Hating is also, I said this, early on, you put yourself in a position of being kind of worn down. You know, you make them into a monster. You make them really powerful. You know, even if you're joking, you're making them really powerful. And so that's why I started out by saying I'm afraid of him, because I am. And I think that I can make him larger than life. And he's not. He's not. And we'll see what happens in November. But, you know, we've had demagogues before. Jackson was a demagogue. He's the one that sent all the Indians to internment camps and kicked them off their reservations and defied the Supreme Court. And he said, yeah, them and what army? You know, I don't remember what they made an order, and they didn't have any way to enforce it, and he just ignored it. And he said, yeah, what army? What army do they have? So, we'll see.
I mean, one of the things when you were asking us to,
mm-hmm.
the way that I was able to have fond feelings for Trump was actually, oh, but he's so good for comedy.
Well, that's a good angle.
Yeah, and I didn't say fond feelings, by the way. I mean, it's fine. I just said that's something you like or respect about him.
I don't know if I respect that.
Yeah. Anyway, we should stop. We're going. Did you take a picture?
No.
Let's do that.
Okay.
But, well, wait a second. Let's end the lecture. But then what we want to do is take a picture for Instagram of people sitting, but we don't take pictures during Zazen, so we want to stage it. And I'm glad there's some women here. We were talking about it before. Right at 9:30, there were nothing but men in here and me, and I was about to, you know, I don't want to be in the picture particularly, but at any rate, so am I glad to see you. So wherever you, if you want to put them back there or put them in here, we'll do whatever.
Right here, and I'll take it from...
Or are you going to do one of lecture time too? Since we're all positioned.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Gay, meet happy fast.
Yeah. But we're going to...
Well, do it now if that's what you want. Yeah. That's okay.
Oh, we're inspired.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I thought we were going to...
Get it.
We were, but that was before somebody said take a picture of lecture.
Well, should we just
call
listening?
Raptly, please look rapt. Yeah.
Tea is going to be good.
No.
No. It's
because it's too. Yeah, it's not. It's not that to me anyway. It doesn't feel the same as zazen. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to have people taking pictures during zazen. Mm-hmm. But lecture doesn't feel so.
Right.
Whatever it is. And maybe somebody could ask, we can just go on. You want to, any other questions or comments?
Oh, I can comment.
All right. but you need to, if he comes around where he can see you, would you put your knees back down?
Yes.
Yes.
No, it's, well, it's been a tough week for me, and it's not the fact that he was acquitted, because I saw that coming for 4.5 months, the acquittal. But what really got under my skin was his behavior afterwards and his own seeking of revenge and his own attitude at the prayer breakfast.
Can you take a picture while you're talking?
Huh?
Sure, can take a picture.
Yeah, you can come around here too, so you can actually, yeah, so you can see, so it isn't just a bunch of backs.
And all of this troubles me, to say the least. And so I was driving down here this morning, and mm-hmm. most of the week. So your question today, you know, think of one thing about Donald Trump that you like. I've been trying to do that for a long time in my loving kindness practice, because I do. Mm-hmm. I hate Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I can think of that keeps it together, mm-hmm. As Katagiri, he's a human being. Mm-hmm. He's here in the universe. He is qualified to be here in the universe. And that's the only thing I have to go on right now, because what happened yesterday and the day before, these are things that challenge my most sacred core beliefs.
Well, go on, I'm sorry.
That's very scary. And I was driving here thinking how this makes me feel physically today. And just besides the constant stories that go on in my head, which, you know, could warrant the FBI coming for me. So,
recording.
Well, but it feels... Oh, we don't have to be recording anymore.